What's good, y'all? It's that time of the year, and we've got bills to pay. So if you enjoy listening to the show, hit the links in the description to support by donating, joining our Patreon, or buying some new merch. If about 10% of you listening right now donate $10 to support the show, we'd have enough to cover an entire year's worth of cost of production. Over the years, I've been very intentional about turning down ads for things that didn't align with our values, so you don't have to listen to us talk about gambling or boner pills or any of that other crap. But that's only possible through the support of you, our listeners. So we've created some new ways for you to support, and again, if you enjoy listening to the show, hit the links in the description to support by donating, joining our Patreon, or buying some of our new merch. And of course, don't forget to tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a compliment will take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Now let's get into today's show.
Welcome to the Exhaust Notes Podcast.
What is good, everybody? Welcome to the Exhaust Notes Formula One Podcast, your favorite Formula One podcaster's favorite podcast, also the favorite podcast of three gentlemen in this room. One of them just got back from a family vacation that I'm completely jealous of. The other one is about to go through the same thing I've been going through the last year, and I'm not jealous of him in any way. I'll let you guess which one of those is which. But anyway, what's good, guys? How you been?
Confused and excited.
That's what I like to have you two in my phone as, and I'll let the listener figure out who's confused and who's excited. No, it's good. Came back from Hawaii, completely life-changing event, and yeah, now the dream is to keep our job, as always is the case with anybody in any vocation, and then now importantly make another little bit of a nest egg so we can go back to Hawaii and eat our weight in shaved ice and acai bowls.
Sounds like the dream.
Let me tell you though, Hawaiian people are some of the greatest people on earth, and here's why. Your boy definitely dropped a couple of graciouses, unironically, and they just let it go. And then one person even followed up and said, it's really nice to see more Hispanic people come to our island.
Well, glad that they're consistent, I guess.
Listeners, I didn't anticipate that anecdote leaving them speechless, but you know, we are where we are.
I do think some of the nicest people on the planet are Hawaiian, but
they're also like some of the rudest. So at least they're covering the spectrum there.
Yeah.
In case you were wondering, Todd's screen name this episode is Rowett, but less funny and white. And that's his first example of being less funny. Yep.
I wish listeners could also see the thumbnail that it has of me right now, because it looks like I'm reading Todd's name and I'm not amused.
Yes. They won't see any of this. This is all not translating well to a non-video podcast.
No, don't worry. So. I just took a
control watch it on Patreon,
screen.
Though.
I took a control alt print screen, and I'll just give it to you. And Nick, if you can name this episode "Row It" but less funny and less white, and then have that as the image, I think we'll go far.
Then run that through an AI image generator and see what comes out.
Yeah, make me. What is it? Studio. I always butcher the
Ghibli.
Studio Ghibli. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's not do that. But you know what we should do? We should talk about some Formula One. We've got a race
coming
up.
We should.
And I feel like, I don't know how it is, but the perception I have is this is everyone's second favorite course. Because as we're prone to say, listener, we're your favorite Formula One podcast, favorite Formula One podcast. But I think this is everyone's second favorite Formula One track. What about this track makes it so appealing to everybody, guys?
I'm going to let Todd go first and talk about the track itself, because I have some tangential interesting things that make it fun for me.
I mean, one, Japan. But let's talk about the track, since you gave me that assignment. I think it's by far and away the driver's favorite track all year. The corners are super high speed, very flowing, as opposed to a lot of current or more recent Formula One tracks, which are like, for lack of a better term, square, just like right angle, left angle, 90 degrees. This is how we drive. It's a lot more flowing. There's a lot of elevation change, and there's two corners on the track, which are basically flat out and very drastic change in directions. The biggest one being 130R, which they're going like 180 miles an hour around that corner, which is probably the biggest thrill, I guess, I would guess for the Formula One drivers, because that's like one of the highest G corners probably all season. But yeah, just I think the atmosphere, the fans there are also insane. Every single driver on the grid has like a fan group there. Like dedicated, diehard, like we're dressed exactly like you kind of fandom.
Have you seen a Lance Stroll group? Because I have not.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. He's got big time fans there. There was even a fan section of theoretical F1 drivers with Brad Pitt faces in the crowd I saw today. Which he's got in that upcoming movie. That,
Formula One? Yeah. On Apple TV's near you soon?
Yeah.
maybe. But there's everybody has fans there. So it's like a really fun atmosphere. But Nick can expand on the tangential stuff to the track.
Well, I think that's a part of it, right? I think that, like, not only do the fans come, you know, Japanese culture anyway, like, surpasses the fandom of any other fan base. Like, even as a Giants fan, going to a Giants game here, being able to go to like the World Series and the playoffs and all of these very important games in the team's history, going to a Tokyo Dome game, the Yomiuri Giants, the fans are just 10,000 times more dedicated to the team, to the experience. And I think Formula One benefits from that in a lot of ways, because the drivers want to show out for the people there more than they do at other tracks, probably. So, like, before we started recording, Todd and I were just talking about some of the things we'd seen. Like, Yuki Rohit, you sent me the artwork that you sent me on Instagram. Right.
About Akira.
Akira, yeah. Like, that's like a spin that brings a new piece of audience in. Yuki is unveiling the Red Bull Neighborhood Japan collaboration collection, you know, on, you know, Hypebeast. Lando Norris showed up in, you know, old, you know, Skyline Liberty Walk collaboration. You know, like those types of things just don't happen on a regular basis. Like, the best way I can explain it to like the broader audience is almost like when Lewis goes to Brazil and he just embraces how much the fan base loves him there. And then like Japan, like I feel like at least half the drivers have that same level of excitement for being there, for connecting with the fans. And it's almost, and it is one of the funner races to watch, in my opinion, because it seems like the drivers are all excited about the track where, you know, I don't know, like, I know this is going to sound like me just hating on Max, but like,
that's fine.
Max is, you know, like last year was the first time that Max lost at his home track, right? And we know that that track would not likely be on the schedule if Max wasn't the face of Formula One right now, because it, by most people's accounts, the track is not like an exciting track to drive. But obviously you want to have the face of Formula One's home track, you know, like you've got to take advantage of that as a business, as an entertainment. So like, I totally understand it, but you know, like Japan is like kind of the opposite in a sense that like, even if Yuki isn't racing, like the likelihood of other drivers that are not from Japan wanting that race to be on the track, even teams, right? Because they know that the fans are going to show up and you know, spend a bunch of money and support, and you know, it's going to be the theater that they're trying to create with racing. So I think like it's just kind of like the perfect storm of excitement without like the, you know, like we kind of talked about what the Vegas stuff was going to be like, a shit show of sorts. I think Japan is like, without the glam and glitz and all of that stuff, Japan is what every race wants to be, if that makes sense.
It's a racer's track, and it just happens to be amongst the backdrop of a culture and a society that is defined by their passion and defined by their eccentricities. And then when that Venn diagram comes in the middle, it truly is a sweet spot. And listeners, the one thing I always point out about Japan, as my co-hosts are prone to agree with, is it's the one track that I can think of that a retired driver has publicly stated that if anybody ever needs an extra driver for this track, I will come out of retirement. And that's how Seb Vettel feels about the track. I feel my two co-hosts have shared a similar passion about it, and it's fun. I mean, I'm fortunate enough that I've traveled to Japan for one trip for 2 weeks, and It is in the most respectful, a country full of dedicated nerds, and I am Indian by birth, I'm American by citizenship, but by collecting, I feel purely Japanese, as if I was the vapors.
Yeah, I think the other part of that, like, if you watch, so we're recording after FP2, if you watched any of the highlights, or if you watched the, you know, first or second practices, you know, the cherry blossoms are blooming right now. So on top of all of that, it's like absolutely fucking beautiful there right now. And like people will, you know, we got lucky and landed there during cherry blossom season last year, you know, and I would go back in a heartbeat, you know, like regardless of the all the things, like that in itself is just an experience. But it kind of seems like everything is falling into place for this weekend. And so I was telling Todd, you know, watching Max get a little shifty out there and seeing Yuki, like, you know, he wasn't like dominating or anything. And it's obviously just practice. They're all getting used to the track and getting used to the cars and stuff. But I like, if I'm hanging on to the hope that kills you, I hope Yuki wins this weekend. Like that is like the ultimate, just win, drop the mic, retire, you're good.
Oh,
I'm out.
Gives Red Bull a finger as he up on the podium.
Yeah. All he has to say is two words, and it's two words that men and women of a certain generation are close to associate with Japan, even though it's not spoken by a true Japanese, and that's konnichiwa, bitches. Fun fact about Japan, also another country where I've inadvertently said gracias.
Well, I'm glad you're bringing Spanish language to other countries consistently.
I'm going to change my display name to Todd, but more funny and more brown by the end of this episode. Just you wait and see, listener.
I Nick was talking about that in the pre-show, that he was just manifesting a Yuki win here. I don't really care what happens in the race, just have Yuki not be 18th to 20th.
Top 10. Yeah. If he gets top 10, because the one thing I fear about most is let's say he ends up in that Lawson range of anywhere from 16 down, people are going to say, oh, see, Yuki didn't get Yuki didn't live up to the opportunity he was finally given. And then I will be very interested to see if Red Bull alters their already parameter shaking precedence by getting rid of a driver after one race, because here, lo and behold, what we always used to joke about Red Bull losing a driver in half a season, and now they've set the new bar, or dropped that new bar to an all-time low with two races. But to do that to Yuki, I would never say a nice thing about Red Bull again.
Right? I mean, see, that's an interesting thing about watching the first couple of practices. Seeing Max, like, I was explaining this to Todd before we started recording too, but like, seeing Max struggle with the car, like Max isn't out there losing it and going into the wall, you know, like a lot of the like rookie mistakes that you would end up doing that you work through over the first few years of your career, right? Hopefully sooner rather than later. Max has worked through that, you know, he made it through that in like the first, what, 12, 16 months of his career. But seeing him out there, like get a little squirrely, like slide a little bit, have to correct, seeing some overcorrections, all of that for me is like also a like kind of makes me question, like, are they really just not putting like a great car out there right now?
Nick,
or just this new livery is so heavy that it throws off all of the balance?
By the way, another favorite part about Japan, they inspired the best liveries between the Red Bull livery, the Haas livery.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Jeff's kiss, chef's kiss, all the kisses.
Yeah.
All consented. Anybody else have a livery for the race?
I don't think anybody else had a special livery other than Haas and Red Bull.
My dear bestie Esty got a pretty sweet helmet too for this race.
Oh, there's a bunch of drivers that have.
Yeah, a lot of good helmets, yeah.
Lando's is pretty dope, even though I don't believe in his Liberty Walk collab. The Haas, I don't think we gave that enough attention, and I will dare I say it, and I'll probably get roasted for this, but the Haas livery is better than the Red Bull special livery this year. The pink Cherry Blossom Sakura livery is just amazing. I just wish they went full pink, because the rear wing and the front wing are still red. And I know that they did like a gradient pinkish to red on the logos or on the special part of the livery. But if they just went all pink, that would have been perfect.
Formula One merchandising. Make like Hot Wheels or die-cast cars of these special liveries, because I feel that would be right? the biggest merch mover of anything.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand why these. I mean, I get that it's a one race thing for a lot of these teams, but like, I'm more. It's almost like, you know. Best way to explain it is we're coming from like a sneaker background in this, right? Like sneaker releases, the limited aspect, the uniqueness of it, the more outside the norm, oftentimes the better the product resonates with people. And I feel like Formula One just does not understand that yet, even though they do limited stuff and there's a bunch of releases and they've been doing this for years. I remember when Lewis was like wearing his like, you know, they call them flat bill caps or whatever. And Mercedes would do a design for every race weekend that they would sell. It was cool, but like the teams themselves should lean into that more. Like, you know, Red Bull having the Japanese heritage tied into Honda, the, you know, the anniversary of Honda's first win in Formula One, all that stuff to me as a Honda fan is so cool. Like I want to buy something and be a part of that, and Yuki getting a seat, it's like more the reason for me to want to buy some merch from them. Haas, for instance, you know, their merch has been very basic,
to say the least, very boring.
Has had no energy at all, and to have the cherry blossoms and like have that livery, it's like that's what I love about racing is like the you know, mixing it up and the having fun with it. Like, you know, I, in my garage, like if you've watched any of the YouTube videos that I've made, I have the livery of the Flying Lizard Porsches from Le Mans, and like they just did these crazy art cars for Le Mans, which a lot of teams do for that race. But like Formula One, like they have such a huge opportunity to do this stuff now because they have so many races on the calendar. I don't need to buy a Haas t-shirt. If I'm a Haas fan, I don't need to buy a Haas t-shirt for 23 races that looks identical to the Haas t-shirt I bought from the first race. So like mix it up, you know, like it doesn't, it's t-shirts, you know, like you're not spending tons of money on this stuff. And if you have excess at the end of it, do a good deed and give it to people in need. Like, it's not that hard to deal with merch at this point. I'm not saying to just go like bananas and pollute the world with t-shirts, but like if I saw somebody wearing a Haas t-shirt, I'd want to have a conversation with them because it's so rare that you see them, right? And it's like this is just a missed opportunity, I think, that a rabbit hole that I wasn't expecting it to go down on this episode.
No, that's what we do at the Exhaust Notes podcast. I mean, one other thing is this, right? Like, what are cherry blossoms associated with normally? Spring? You know what? I think if Haas came up with a press release that said, hey guys, we know that this was initially for the livery, but as long as we're in the quote-unquote spring season, the livery stays, is somebody really going to protest?
No, see, but that's the problem, and that's exactly what I wanted to talk about with this since we're down this rabbit hole now. Like, the teams can't lean into it fully because, God forbid, like, the MoneyGram logo isn't red to match their corporate branding. Like, to me, that sticks out. Like, having the pink nose and tail on this car would make it that much better. And also, like, sticks out to me as, like, oh, a pink MoneyGram logo. That's different than what my brain has registered before. That would make me pay attention to it. But the F1 teams in general can't get out of their own way. Look at the times that Ferrari has done a special livery. Do you remember Monza a couple years ago when they did the yellow race suits and the yellow everything? And we got all excited about that. Like a yellow Ferrari would be, which Ferrari is kind of known for, like to have that special yellow color on some of their cars. They can't get out of their own way. And they're like, oh, nope, we'll just make the tail yellow. And that was it. That was the whole special livery.
Yeah.
Like these teams. And McLaren's super guilty of this, of like, oh, we're going to do, what was their last one that was really, really bad? they were trying to do the chrome McLaren from like 2008.
Yeah.
With a chrome tie-in, but it literally was just like a silver strip in the middle of the car. Why not just make it one race where the whole thing is silver?
Yeah. So I think fundamentally this is a Formula One management issue. Like, we might get canceled, so if you don't hear us after this episode, that's probably true. But like, if you look at F1.com right now, like most of my Formula One news either comes from the Discord feed or from F1.com or the F1 app, right? Like, I try to not get too far into the rabbit holes outside. But like, when I look at the site right now, I just scrolled through, like, you can see the Red Bull livery for Japan. There's a whole gallery, big post in the center of the page, you know. And this is the issue. Haas has a better livery. Like, I absolutely love that Red Bull livery, but like, to see the cherry blossoms on the car is like, oh shit, somebody actually like really pushed the envelope and convinced the higher ups to let go a little bit and to actually embrace this. And there's not a featured post on F1.com about that car. You have to go Google it and find it on another site. And that's just unfortunate, because I understand that Formula One is not going to bring in fans. Look, if you're a Haas fan somehow and you just are discovering Formula One, it's going to be a rough ride. Sorry to break it to you. But like, only highlighting Red Bull, McLaren, you know, Lewis and Ferrari, like, if you don't start embracing the whole sport and giving that exposure, then like, why would these teams go out of their way, you know, to try to do something above and beyond, right? Like, I get that there's a lot of nuance to all of this, but F1 as a whole should be like embracing this as like, we are the information source for all things Formula One. And then these brands that are sponsoring like Haas or sponsoring any of the other cars are going to say, hey, we're willing to flex a little bit because we know we're going to be able to get that screen grab off of F1.com. We know we're going to get that camera time at the track, or we know we're going to get that social post at the track. If you're trying to monetize every little aspect of that as Formula One as an entity, then you're shooting yourself in the foot, because those top three teams don't really need your help to expose they don't need the exposure. You need to use them for the exposure. But if that's how you lean into content and marketing, then you're setting yourself up, and you're setting up all those teams down the grid for failure when they do try to do these fun things, because it's got to get out there to every single potential Formula One fan. And the best way to do that is through like the F1 app and F1.com, because that's the general ease of entry point of entry for Formula One fans, right?
If only I knew a marketing person that would be really good at doing that for F1.
Who happens to be looking for work right now. resume in the bio.
Add him on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
It's a CV, Nick. It's a CV.
Oh, yeah. CV, yeah.
No, but I think, Nick, you bring up a salient point, right? Like, you don't have to be a Formula One fan to know what Ferrari is or Red Bull. Like, you could be an extreme sports connoisseur, and Red Bull is going to be very much entrenched in your life. I'm trying to think. Mercedes is another one of those things where, a lack of a better term, they're a legacy brand that almost operates outside the realm of the sport. But then, to your point, the likes of an Alpine or a Williams even, like, that's for true car heads. So they do need to have a sliding scale. So if I was a Formula One fan, I too would want to, quote unquote, beef up the middle class, right? Because I go back to the saying that I believe David Stern went unofficial on the record for, because somebody accused him of saying, I think Kobe Bryant was his favorite star. He goes, no, my favorite star is the next star, because that's the business that they should be in, and that's the business they are hopefully in, which is making us care about the flora and fauna of it all. We know who the protagonists are. It's just give us a damn about the scenery. Give us a damn about the tertiary characters, because that makes the enjoyment of the sport even more appealing. Because when you see a surprise podium or even a surprise race winner, it just means more, to borrow the old SEC analogy.
And that's a great point, too, because right now, I mean, we've all talked about, like, Haas is impressing. Like, they are way more impressive than any of us expected out of the gate this year. Not that they're, like, dominant or anything, but it's like they're on track, are impressing beyond what expectations were, and they're doing this cool shit with their livery. You got to be leaning into that. Give them a little. It doesn't take much to do a little bit here and there, and have these things. You know, like, I haven't, like, dug through and seen all the things that they've done, so I don't know exactly, but, like, it just feels like the mindset is missing there to you know, like, connect with everybody across the teams.
I totally agree. There's a lack of awareness around anything special going on within F1, and it's just like, here's the cars that go around the track. Right? Granted, like, the thrill of F1 is supposed to be the draw, but, like, there's so much more minutiae you can get into. Even if you're a hardcore race fan, like, there's so much more content that could be created around the drivers, the behind the scenes, the special things that they do. Like, Red Bull is pretty good about doing it, where they have, you know, Yuki in a monster truck or whatever, but you don't see the other teams doing that at all. And then you really don't see the coverage from, I guess, legacy Formula One media about that kind of stuff.
And I think that's where the money is, quote unquote, going to be made, because the media company that comes up with that first youth-focused Formula One content channel, so whatever the Formula One equivalent of a tunnel fit is, or whatever the Formula One equivalent of a meme is, and to the point we've made in previous episodes, right, I would say this healthy batch of young viral drivers, and I mean viral in the viral sense, because we've accused Lando of being a meme lord. Yuki is infinitely memeable. Kimi's got tweak potential from South Park. Like, these things can write themselves. They just need the right amount of curation.
He's such a... He's so tweak. I never connected that before.
Yeah!
Well, that's something that, like when we were talking before about Lando's partnership with Liberty Walk and Quadrant. I mean, like, if you look at the photos, like, he's wearing, like, some trendy Asics, you know, like the Y2K style Asics. I don't know which ones in particular. I don't have it pulled up, but, like, you know, that's the kind of thing where it's like, oh, there's a connection between these people off, you know, like, we really only have that with Lewis. And then we, you know, have the moments of, like, oh, you know, like when Yuki and Pierre Gasly were doing the AlphaTauri, you know, photo shoots and stuff, like, it was entertaining and fun, but, like, there's not enough of the, to your point, the tunnel fits type stuff of, like, you know, like, I want to know, like, who's eaten, like, you know, I don't know, who's eaten pizza before the races, like, what are the weird quirky things? But we only get that at the very end of the season, it feels like, with Formula One.
The Secret Santa. Like, the Secret Santa videos are my favorite things.
And that's absolutely that's what I was thinking of, yep.
Yep. And it's one of those things where we're going to continue to see how Formula One evolves alongside this added pressure, right? Because now we're in essentially year 7 of what we've dubbed the Netflix era of Formula One, which is kind of like the Big Bang, if you will, where this is the moment where it moved past just the diehards. It's very much in the conscience of the public, greater pop culture sensibility. And now it's a question of, is it an endurance race, meaning how long can they maintain that grasp? Because I would say this, Formula One's Drive to Survive season this year actually feels relevant and exciting in a way that previous seasons haven't. And so in a way, that maybe breathes new life into the sport, but they need to maintain it. They need to hit the ground running, so to speak. And this season, to me, will be a very telling indicator of how much longer Formula One continues to be a thing as opposed to just a niche hobby for some.
Agreed. And I think that's the thing that, like, ultimately Japan will bring that passion out of people, right? With all of these things that happen at this race that just don't, you know, they happen occasionally at other races. And the helmets have become a thing on a regular basis for all the drivers. But, like, that's, like, so low effort to me. Like, go further with all this stuff. Like get people excited about it. I think also, you know, as scary as it might sound or seem right now, like, with all this political stuff and the tariffs and, like, the economies around the world, you know, taking a
hit.
Free the penguins, you know? Like, this is, like, the time when, like, leaning into that can really, like, elevate a sport, right? I don't know if you guys remember, you know, 2008, but, like, people stop spending money. You sit at home and watch TV and, like, you do a lot less out and about spending. You know, your trips to Hawaii become a little less frequent. And, like, all that stuff happens.
Don't you take that away from me. That evil in, Engvall.
But that's the interesting thing about where we're at with it, too. Mm-hmm. I just feel like, wait, now's the time to, like, really lean into this, knowing that, like, things are chaotic and could be, you know, like, look, Formula One's a rich man's sport. Like, there's billions and billions of dollars in the sport. And the little bit of effort in that aspect of things could really transform the audience over the next 3 to 4 years, in my opinion.
If only they would see that, though. And I don't think they will.
Yeah.
Hire Nick. And
then hire Nick and Todd. This will turn into a employment podcast about two of my favorite people in the world. So if need be, listeners, if McLaren continues to win races, I'm going to dedicate all of my free time on this podcast to highlight the championship mentality and the culture-setting ways of Nicholas J. Engvall and Todd J. Yates.
We're all J's.
Yeah.
All right, so what do we think about this actual race, guys?
I have something I want to talk about. And yes, listener, we may be beating a dead horse in the ground because not only am I a co-host of this podcast, I'm arguably one of its biggest fans. So coming off of what I thought was the best episode in a long time because they got rid of some dead wood, can I just touch on something that was the crux of the conversation that we always have around Red Bull, which is we always cater our prognostication, our perspectives on, well, you know, Max is a given in that car. It's just what happens to that second seat. And the best thing we could come up with is the ideal second driver is a clone of Max or Fernando Alonso. And I think a clone of Max is more likely than Fernando Alonso jumping ship. But if we can just shift the paradigm of that conversation and say, if Red Bull did not have Max, are they the worst team on the grid given how complex this car is?
No, I don't think that's... I want to get your thoughts here, but I'll give you my two cents real quick. The car itself is fast, theoretically. Like, the car designers still know what they're doing in making a fast car with good downforce, low drag, that kind of stuff. So, like, the idea is there, right? I compare it a lot to, and maybe it's not even this bad, the Mercedes in the new ground effect era when they came in, and it was just... We heard porpoising for the better part of a season. And the Mercedes was fast with the zero pods. Remember, it was fast like on paper. I feel like that's very much kind of the territory that we're in for Red Bull, is that it is a fast car and they keep doing things to it that makes it fast around a track. It's just very hard to drive. The thing is, it's still, even at its worst, it's still as fast or faster than a Haas or an Alpine or a Williams right now, just because they're farther off in terms of like total lap time. So I think that we have potentially, we take Max out of the equation and we're looking at the fourth, fifth best car, right?
Okay, so you still think it's in that upper middle class range?
Yeah, I'd say it's like a still best of the rest situation.
So you're saying it's like, if you're ranking the top five, you're saying McLaren, Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull?
Red Bull, yeah. It would be like a fourth or fifth type of thing. Like, maybe it's as fast in like Yuki's hands as, and maybe, I don't know, he's actually so far done pretty well this weekend, even given the interruptions and stuff. But like, put it in Yuki's hands only, and he's fighting like, you know, the front running Williams or the front running
Alpine, Haas.
Alpine. Yeah.
But that's interesting because right now, correct me if I'm wrong, we were coming off a couple episodes where he kind of said if a couple bounces didn't go their way, Red Bull would be in fourth place right now anyway. So it's almost like a Max Verstappen doesn't necessarily matter if that's kind of the pretense of the logic we're using. Because I could make the argument right now that McLaren, Ferrari, and who's the third one? A Mercedes all look to be a better car right now. So in my mind, somebody could easily make that argument that they're already fourth best and they happen to have the best driver on the grid.
No, because I think they are third in the constructors. So like if they don't have Max, I think they fall to like a five or a six.
Fair.
Right? Like it's also hard to – I think what probably twists that – like all this conversation is that the standings don't necessarily directly translate because you have two drivers on each team, right? Like, you know, you could have the fourth best car and you could still be the seventh best driver in the standing, if that makes sense, right? Because, like, yep. Assuming two drivers for each team are dominant. I don't know if – I'm confused as to, like, how Red Bull is kind of – I know this is, like, the trend of Formula One, right? Like, a team dominates for years at a time and then falls off and, like, you know, somebody pokes a hole in the armor and the next team comes in and dominates for a few years. But it feels really weird to me to have Red Bull kind of slipping right now when last year the blame was on Checo for not being a supportive teammate to Max. You know, we've talked at length about all the shit show that's gone on outside of the racing for Red Bull over the last, you know, 18 months or whatever, 24 months. But it still seems weird that the car is falling off when you have the most money and the best driver in the world. I don't understand how you lose that.
Can I posit a conspiracy theory? Because it's what I'm prone to do on this podcast. Remember a couple of years ago where Ferrari was kind of going through their doldrums and their lull, and we couldn't figure out what it was, but everybody had that thought that it was an unofficial but official suspension. And because I forgot what the exact issue was it something with the engine that caused
the
Ferrari
fuel pump?
Yeah. Fuel pump. And it seemed like after the fuel pump was kind of acknowledged and then said, hey, Ferrari, very bad on you. They went on a mysterious tailspin for what felt like 2.5 years, which kind of ended the which started the Carlos Sainz Charles Leclerc era, but ended the Sebastian Vettel era. Are we sure this isn't some sort of weird punishment that Red Bull has gone through based on the alleged scandals of one Christian Horner and Helmut Marko's out and out douchebaggery?
I mean, I don't know if punishment is.
Yeah, yeah, you Christian never Horner's into that sort of thing. You're right. Maybe I need to change the wording.
Yeah, who knows? But it is kind of – so the other thing about that is like the trajectory of kind of like not necessarily worst to first, but like really sucking for a while and then getting it figured out and then rising to the top is pretty common in F1, right? Like Formula – like McLaren was like – pretty shit for a couple of years there and then like figured it out and they start to get better. Then, you know, Lando starts to grow into his own. Oscar starts to show up. But like the same thing kind of happened for Red Bull, right? Like they really struggled the first couple of years. And then eventually they get over that hurdle and it's like, oh, you know, Seb is a part of that. Then Max comes in and like all of a sudden it's like, oh, the team has it all figured out. But that's the part that, like, I can't wrap my head around. Is like, rules change, yes, but, like, rules change for everybody, you know? Like, it's not like somebody's coming in and saying, nah, you guys can't use this, but they're using it. It's like, you know everything. Everybody has the same guidebook to go through, the same rule book to follow, and, like, they clearly have and spend way more money across the two teams than most of the teams on the grid. It just seems like they should be able to overcome these little things in a way much quicker or easier than the rest of the teams. And I even think that about like Checo, right? Like Checo as a driver is obviously very talented, but then like what happens to, you know, what is it Checo? Was it Checo that became the problem over the last, you know, 16 months? Or is it Red Bull, you know, not
scapegoating Checo?
Yeah, yep. Or is it Red Bull scapegoating him? Or is it really them just not acknowledging what was going on with the cars themselves? Because, like, you know, like I said earlier, to see Max getting a little sideways and getting a little squirrely out there, like, I just don't remember the last time I saw Max make those kind of mistakes. And I don't think it's Max making the mistakes. Like, I think that Max expects very specific things from the car because he knows how to drive, and they've delivered the car that drives that way. And it's kind of like, what gives, you know?
But never underestimate the power of a great meat shield, because ultimately that's what Checo was. And Checo was the glue that kind of prevented us from looking at all the other considerable faults and cracks in the foundation of Red Bull. And they don't have that now. And so that's why I think that may be another ulterior motive of why Yuki's getting this car, because they cannot
have enough people to blame that are not named Christian Horner, Max Verstappen, or Helmut Marko. Everybody else within that organization is fair game. And as long as the Holy Trinity are untainted, everything is copacetic as far as I'm concerned.
No, I think, like, we really started to see the downturn of Red Bull, like, summer break-ish last season. And they brought more updates to the car that didn't work and didn't expect to do what they did and made the car less forgiving and easy to drive. And we've just, it seems like they doubled down on that. Like, we all think back to Miami last year when McLaren got quick all of a sudden. It was like, oh, shit, they have a really good car. They went on to win Miami. And then it was kind of Red Bull chasing them. And then they brought updates to the summer break. And I think that, and this could be, and maybe this is just speculation, but losing the CFD wizard named Mr. Newey is going to start to hurt them, because by all accounts, he wasn't super involved in the building of the car. He was like an advisor at that point. But he would still say, like, hey, maybe don't go down this road because it's not going to work out in the way you think it will or whatever. And now that they don't have him full time, maybe it's really, they're really reaping what they sow there by losing him. But I don't think Checo was necessarily a scapegoat there, but like, I've made this joke for probably years now on this podcast, is like the Chamber of Fear style that they have, that was like early 2000s Ferrari. It was like sink or swim, survival of the fittest, and Checo wasn't necessarily cut out for that. And I think the energy in that garage is very much that now. Christian Horner puts off that aura, Dr. Evil puts out that aura, Max is like, you know, the young Sith Lord. Like, that's just the way they operate now. So they're going to continue to chew up and spit out teammates while the car isn't working, and while those people are in charge, or, you know, the head of that organization.
So of Evil those three, who's the first to leave?
Christian Horner.
Really? I think it's Max. I think Max has seen enough, and I think, was it you, Nick, or was it you, Todd, that made that point last week, where it was just, if he's not seeing the writing on the wall, then he's the one that's got the crayon in his hand that's just saying, get me out of here, please. And the question I have is, I don't think he's enough damaged goods that teams are going to be put off by him, but I'm really interested to see him in a new situation, because I don't know if people would be as forgiving of him as Red Bull is. So it's one of those things where, yeah, he could jump ship. It would make a lot of sense. But then is he going to be coddled and pacified the same way he would if he was still in Red Bull? Because in my mind, I truly believe that man can do no wrong as long as he's within the navy blue, red, and yellow corner of the paddock.
Hmm. All right. So I have an interesting thought. There's an episode of Drive to Survive where basically Max starts talking to Toto, because once Lewis commits to Ferrari, Toto had promised Lewis that he wouldn't approach Max until as long as Lewis was driving for Mercedes. And in that, you know, I know it's over dramatized for Drive to Survive, but like, Christian Horner is obviously like a part of it, and they ask him about it, and now I'm wondering, like, is that all it took to throw off Red Bull, is having an actual competitive team in Max's ear saying you could do better?
One of my favorite things as it evolves dynasties is the Pat Riley concept of the disease of more, the disease of me. I always forget which it is, so I use them synonymously. And it's one of those things that the more a team wins, the more every single person on that team thinks it's primarily because of the sacrifices or their efforts that have led to those championships or that acknowledgement. And even somebody as hallowed and as inevitable, as celebrated as Max Verstappen, could probably think in his mind, I still don't get enough credit for what I'm doing because I'm the one leading these chuckleheads to victory time and time again. So if somebody is willing to offer him X being his salary times two, times three, of course he would want to at least consider it. He would be a fool not to.
Yeah, I mean, he's got his four driver's championships. He's still, obviously it's early in the season, but he's not, for as how the car is, he's still in second place, given he's driven through some very challenging races so far and still in second place. Like, he's not looking that bad, right? So, but if they really fall off a cliff, let's say the summer break comes and they're way behind Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren, he might start looking around, right? Like, he's either going to do that or he's going to just go sim race with his daughter and his new forthcoming baby, right? He's not going to care. He doesn't seem like the type that's like in it for the spirit or the team building or anything. He just likes to race. That's it. And he'll do that wherever he wants to.
So he's really Ricky Bobby is what you're telling me.
Yep.
He's got a questionable father, a very still come back. No, but I mean, I guess the other thing I have is like, we're almost giving him and Red Bull kind of a eulogy this episode. And that was not our intention. This is just kind of how the conversation is shaped. But I guess let me ask you this. Would you guys be surprised if A, Max Verstappen left Red Bull, and then B, if he did leave Red Bull and he never won another title again? Would that be a disappointment to you? Would that impact his overall legacy? Or would it just kind of solidify that he is, in a very crude sense, Sebastian Vettel 2.0, meaning he's a championship-winning racer, but it's only at one spot?
I mean, I would be super bummed if he doesn't win a couple more championships. Like, I'm obviously not a Max fan the way, you know, like a lot of people are, but like talking to Todd and Aaron and Trevor, who've been on the show before, you know, like one thing that, like to Todd's point, is like Max just likes to race. If you just like to race and you decide to stop before, like well before your time has come, I feel like that's kind of being not true to yourself. But maybe sim racing provides the same level of, you know, happiness for Max. I can't wrap my head around that because, like, I don't know, I've been to a racetrack before, but like I don't see him. I don't see him like sticking with Red Bull beyond any amount of time because he does just want to race. Like, and if he's at the back of the pack or in the middle, like, granted, we're talking about this as if Red Bull's, you know, falling off the grid, but they're literally, you know, a couple spots behind. But that's also because of our expectations of where they should be at all times at this point in the last 8 years or whatever it's been. So I don't know.
I would call back to 2010, 11, 12, 13. Those are the 4 years that Seb won the championship. Everything was hunky-dory gravy. Everything was super good until it wasn't, and they weren't winning. And that relationship soured in basically less than a year. And Seb moved on, I think, from what? Which was 2014, I think he moved on. And went to Ferrari. So it's very possible. Like, we could see, it's not completely unreasonable to say Max ends up somewhere within the next year or so. So,
yeah, I think, sorry, didn't mean
to. No, I was just going to say, like you just kind of pointed out, Nick, he's so young in his career. Granted, yeah, he's been on the grid for 8 years now, I think, but he's still like, Lewis is 39, Fernando's 43. And they're both still racing, and he's of that ilk that where he could race forever. So,
yeah. I mean, I do think like there's something to be said about like how you refer to it as the chamber of fear, right? Like there is a weird dynamic there that you know, it also is like compounded because, you know, Max's dad is in everybody's ear, which, you know, like, and on the TV, you know, like all in the videos dancing, as they would say in the hip hop world. But like, that's part of the problem to me is like the, like you're dealing with two main character energy people when you sign Max, because you have to deal with his dad. Like, to me, that's kind of weird. On the flip side, you have, you know, Lewis and his dad's out, you know, consoling the rookie drivers when they go off and make a mistake. You know, it's a different kind of energy. And like, I think ultimately that also drives, you know, mechanics away. It drives engineers away, you know, like, not to say that any of that stuff had anything to do with some of the changes, but like, you know, like I forget his name. Is it Callum Nicholas? Is the F1 mechanic?
Yep.
Former.
Oh, Callum Nichols.
Nichols, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and him leaving, like, not to say that there's any connection between the energy around things, but if you've done this for a while and shit starts to go downhill in any way, and you have a kid at home that you want to be spending more time with, why hold on to the toxicity of what exists in the garage when you could just go and live your life and enjoy it? And I think that's why, you know, circling back, I think that's why, like with the Seb analogy that you had, well, that's probably why it happened so quickly, right? Because it's like, you have a lot of great people here. And when you have great people, that means they're capable of going and doing something else somewhere, whether that's being a mechanic for another team or just, you know, living their life in some other way. And usually you don't have any type of understanding of that when there's so much conflict, or at least it seems as if there's conflict between the top three or four there.
Yeah. I also cannot believe you just compared Joss Verstappen to a video hoe, which is...
Put that in AI. It's Studio Ghibliot.
Yes, it has to be done.
I think he's a distraction. Like, that's... I got into this in the Discord a while back, and this is where you came in a little late to this, but I just think he's a distraction. And, like, for... Like, I am not dedicated to the news cycle. I don't see most of the stuff. I don't follow a lot of this stuff close enough. I learn about it through, like, us doing the research for the show and talking to each other on the show. And I just, like, there's no world where him as a, you know, like, you've already got, you know, don't be a helmet Marco being, like, the evil Lord Sith of whatever, you know. And it's like, you can't have competing evil leaders at the top of your hierarchy. Like, that's the problem with this kind of narrative that they have. And we don't know necessarily, like, how evil they are, but, like, general consensus is that, like, neither of these guys is a decent human being. So, like, most people below Christian Horner and Max need decent human beings to make sure that they want to stick around to be a part of something. That's just how I feel about it.
I think that's the appropriate feeling, because we've all acknowledged that for a lot of people, Red Bull's biggest hurdle in terms of being universally adored the way most dynasties are, at least initially, is the fact that they are run by very unlikely and unlikable people, unlikable folk like Christian Horner, like Helmut Marko, like Max Verstappen. And it almost seemed like that second seat was the nice portion, or the nice part of being a Red Bull fan, because you had the likes of a Danny Ric, you had Alex Albon, you had Pierre Gasly. Knock on wood, you have Yuki Tsunoda for the whole rest of the season, because then you don't feel as scuzzy supporting them.
Well, Dr. Evil already said it. Yuki's in the car for the rest of the year, supposedly. Okay. And no matter how it goes.
And that's worth the contract that they've signed Yuki on for the rest of the year. Like, that's our favorite analogy, our favorite reoccurring guest point, so to speak, about this. Is just Formula One contracts aren't worth the paper that they're signed on. Good for Dr. Marko Evil. Look at that, Todd. I've confused him. But good for Dr. Helmut for...
Zhou Guanyu.
Ferrari reserve driver. I'm waiting for him to be the Red Bull representative for the Chinese Grand Prix.
He's in his hot boy summer. He's not going to... Don't worry about him.
Espresso?
He's a model now. You need to look it up. It's hilarious.
Like, is it Pierre Gasly model or Valtteri Bottas model?
It's kind of better than both. I mean, less cheeks, so not better than Terry.
I'm out.
Yeah. But it's funny. You got to look up Zhou Guanyu's
modeling career.
Modeling career, yes.
All right, predictions. Last call for predictions. This was supposed to be a sprint episode, and we're look at us. We're at 53 minutes already.
That is a sprint for us.
That is true. Yeah.
I'll be happy if this lasts under an hour. I'll go ahead and start. I'll go Lando 1, Tweak, a.k.a. Kimi Antonelli 2, and Oscar 3.
Wow. Todd, what do you got?
I'm going to go Oscar 1 overtakes Lando in the championship. And then we'll go George Russell to Max 3.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say Lando, George, Max. But just to put it out there into the universe, what I really want is Yuki 1, Yuki 2, Yuki 3.
Dylon. No, here's a follow-up question. And realistically, where do we see Yuki falling? Because I think that is going to be, with all due respect to the podium winners, that is going to be the most interesting plot of this race, is how does Yuki contend with the pressures of that Red Bull seat? I think he will be, I'm going to say, over under 8.5 in terms of his positioning. Let me pose that to you, gentlemen.
Under being that he's like in P7?
P7 and up is under.
Okay, so I would take the under on that. I think Yuki's going to have a good weekend.
Ooh. I'm thinking... Yeah, I would say under. I think he's going to finish 8th. So,
as always, listener, I will be the man in the black hat with a questionable mustache. I'll go over. I think he'll be in that 10 to 12 range where he may get a point, but I think it will be a general improvement over what Liam Lawson has done over these two races, and that's not fair to Liam Lawson because two races should not constitute a sample size, but we are where we are.
Yeah, there's a horrible joke about two races being a sample size there that we should just not get into. But thanks for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Peace.
Before we go, you can follow me on OnlyFans at 2 Drivers 1 Cup.
Oh man. God. I don't know how to follow that up.
Yeah. Never.